to protect his university and his country. Some university leaders interpreted their responsibilities in a different manner, fearing the CIA as some Orwellian invader. The CIA, of course, had no legal means to compel cooperation. The CIA could work only with citizens who wanted to cooperate. There was no intimidation or leverage other than patriotism and self-interest. The best partners and sources, though, are those who embrace the mission, not those compelled to cooperate. That's the beauty and the strength of U.S. civil liberties in the espionage business. Although an unacceptable paradox for some, it is true. I saw it in NR operations every day. Strong civil liberties keep our country strong, and they include the right of free citizens to help protect their country. Yes, these people were helping a spy on foreign nationals, but that falls within the bounds of the rights and, I believe, the obligations of citizens under our Constitution. For that reason, I grew increasingly wary of the FBI, with powers of search, seizure, and arrest proclaiming its paramount intelligence role inside our borders. The consolidation of such coercive and intrusive power in one entity seemed threatening, as did the increased power of the U.S. military in the homeland with the creation of Northern Command. I did not want intelligence and law enforcement in one domestic agency. I certainly did not want law enforcement and intelligence combined with military power in our homeland. For the last two decades, I had worked to protect the United States, and now I wondered if Al-Qaeda or some other enemy would scare us into behavior that threatened our nation more than they did. AQ could not defeat us, but we could undermine our own institutions and threaten our own liberties if we overreacted. On the other hand, our ability to collect and analyze intelligence against foreign threats inside our own borders was rudimentary at best. The paradox of a CIA spy and a university president agreeing on the need to spy on his campus while protecting civil liberties was rich. The meeting with the university president had lasted just under 30 minutes. I thanked him again. He looked at me almost with disapproval, as if that sentiment was totally unnecessary. He offered a curt nod and quickly slipped into the hotel hallway. I wondered how some university authorities could risk allowing an AQ operative on campus. Was it because they feared cooperation with U.S. intelligence more than the threat to their students? How irresponsible could they be? Or was it more honest ignorance, rooted in misperceptions about the CIA? Or some combination. The following year, NR and the FBI would jointly sponsor a gathering of university presidents to discuss these issues of intelligence and law enforcement collaboration. Biological weapons. The mega-wealthy CEO was worried about biological weapons, BW. Bioscience was not his industry, but he had broad interests, and as a responsible citizen he wanted to learn more. He wanted to know how he could contribute. He was a good, reliable, and immensely influential partner, so I organized a team of experts from the CIA and flew to meet him in his palatial home. We briefed. We reviewed Aum Shinrikyo's 1995 sarin gas attack on the Tokyo subway. The release of the neurotoxin had killed 12 and injured hundreds. I told him about AQ's biological warfare experiments at Darunta Farms in Afghanistan. I outlined what we learned from AQ's anthrax labs uncovered in Afghanistan. The CEO asked other questions. We briefed some more, and soon the meeting evolved into a discussion. Through his intensive questioning, I realized how lax the U.S. government was regarding biological weapons, not just the lack of intelligence, but also the absence of a policy that would drive intelligence requirements. Our talk lasted most of the day. The homeland BW defense was immature, and our intelligence collection against the BW threat was, if anything, even weaker. Our policy was almost non-existent. Our collective ignorance, underscored during the meeting with our CEO partner, irritated me. These BW intelligence gaps looked more and more like black holes, expanding all the time. A good intelligence officer cultivates an awareness of what he or she does not know. You need a dose of modesty to acknowledge your own ignorance, even more, to seek out your ignorance. Then the harder part comes, trying to do something about it. That often requires an immodest determination. NR could not make policy, but we could stimulate requirements from the ground up. There was no need to wait on policymakers to tell us what was important, although that is their responsibility. When I returned to HQS, I sat down with Donna in her tiny, messy office. She was in charge of all NR requirements and reporting, determining what was valuable intelligence and guiding the field, helping the field accomplish its collection mission. From a small town in Pennsylvania, Donna had joined the CIA 5 years out of college. She started as a GS-5 clerk. During tours abroad in Europe and Latin America, she had earned one promotion after another. She was now a GS-15 branch chief. She was smart, tough, introverted, and unaware of her leadership potential. I often bounced questions and problems her way. I told her about the meeting, about the unsatisfactory state of our BW policy and intelligence efforts. She already knew that, but I told her anyway. "This is ugly. We have policies on nuclear and chemical weapons, but not much on bio, and our BW collection sucks. Smart and evil guys can cook up pathogens in a kitchen. We can spot a nuclear plant, but not that kitchen," I reflected. "Let me think about it some more," she said. Meanwhile, I flew to Atlanta and met with some of the experts at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, for a briefing. I left there more worried than ever. The outbreak of some horrible disease, according to the CDC, could be naturally occurring or man-made. At first, probably nobody would be able to tell. In almost all cases, the production of pathogens has legitimate dual use. Scientists needed to produce and experiment with diseases so they can find treatments and cures. Discerning the bad actors from the universe of legitimate ones is the key. NR, and the rest of the CIA for that matter, could chase hundreds of leads to no avail. How to narrow the focus? What was relevant? A couple of weeks later, after Donna had engaged with other experts, she explained to me the best approach. "Weaponization," she said. "Of what?" I asked. "Of the pathogens. That's what makes the difference in our intelligence collection. We focus on the process of turning pathogens into weapons." I spoke with one biologist who emphasized aerosolization. We find a guy with some virus, and he could just be a grad student doing legitimate research. But if we find a guy with a virus and the means of aerosol dispersal, we have an intelligence target. This of turning pathogens into weapons. I spoke with one biologist who emphasized aerosolization. We find a guy with some virus, and he could just be a grad student doing legitimate research. But if we find a guy with a virus and the means of aerosol dispersal, we have an intelligence target.
Makes sense. What else?
It gets better, or worse, she said. This biologist described recent research into Alzheimer's disease. Some progress. Scientists are learning how to initiate the disease, the first step in learning how to cure it.
That's good, I noted.
Not if you take the research and produce the means to attack armies or populations, inducing mental collapse.
Mental collapse? Of armies? So what do we do with this? I asked.
Our biologist friend will work with us to draft a simple primer for the field, so our collectors can start focusing on bioweaponization. Working with the Directorate of Intelligence and the other DO divisions, we can generate more specific requirements, country by country, then see what we can find, Donna concluded.
And we can pass to our foreign liaison partners so they can look, I added, trying to be useful. One thing that we learned in pursuing BW leads was the overwhelming importance of knowledge and intent. BW, more than any other WMD, depends on what an individual had in his head. With abundant toxins in the natural world, such as castor beans for producing ricin, smart, informed individuals with lethal intent can produce a BW agent. Such processes are relatively cheap and can be easily concealed. So we placed a premium on finding potential threats manifested in the human dimension. That, of course, is the essence of espionage. With a list of institutions from key countries involved in BW efforts, we looked at graduate students in the United States linked to these institutions. With no extra resources or added incentive and only mild interest from other quarters, NR's initiative did not gain immediate traction. Nevertheless, Donna pushed. The field responses were meager.